You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Howdy, y'all.
And it's me, Brian. This week we are talking about anime airing between the 12th of April and the 16th of April. So it's not quite a full week.
I guess with the exception of Bono, which we're catching up on.
Oh, that's true, yes. That one is from... So take 13 weeks off that.
It doesn't sound like very many days, but that's a shit ton of stuff.
Mm-mm.
Okay, let's get cracking. I'm going to shake things up a bit. Let's get cracking with some new stuff.
All right.
Brand new. 100% Teacher Pascal, Episode 1. And his name is Pascal Sensei. And also, Perfect Plate. It was a two-part story.
Okay, so I have one major question.
Yes.
Are those glasses on his face, or is that a mustache?
I took them as being glasses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he's a teacher.
Well, teachers have mustaches.
That's true, but yeah. It kind of looks like the sort of glasses a teacher would look over at.
Right, okay.
Also, is he some kind of mole creature? Because I know often people are wearing shades as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And also, is he a penguin?
That's a big question that everyone has, yeah, sure.
Is he Penguin Beckham from the creator's previous series, A Penguin's Troubles? Because at one point, he gets hit by the tough student in the class.
Yeah.
And his head flips open, and inside is Penguin Beckham from the previous series this guy did.
He's a penguin sent back from the future, giving like a mole creature teacher exoskeleton to assassinate Sarah Connor. Yeah. I don't know.
And that's only half the story, because in the other half of the story, the setting is entirely different. He's just in some sort of...
Well, it's not just him. It's him and another him.
Yes, a cool him and a hero him.
Yeah. Which one's the protagonist?
Well,
is the problem, I guess.
Yes.
Mm.
And they're on some sort of fantasy quest.
Yeah.
And it makes very little sense in either story.
Yeah, pretty much. Initially it seems to be going like, oh, that's why he's a teacher. No, it isn't. Is the kind of main crux of the first one.
The setup is this class of elementary school children have been told, your teacher's left, retired to become a YouTuber. Here's your new teacher.
That's
this
a good bit.
Weird creature who can't even spell his own name.
Yeah. And they're kind of all very annoyed about this. They get the tough guy who's been held back a few years by the look of it to beat him up, I guess. Or rather, he says he'll beat him up.
He's drawn in a completely different style to the
he's from a different
characters.
show. And your man's a very bad teacher because he's like, we've got to get down to serious work. He pulls out a Beyblade out of his fucking bag, like a photorealistic one. That was, or probably a CG render, but still. That was pretty great.
It's hijinks and the opening promises even weirder characters to show. It looks like there's going to be a pupil who's a robot and another pupil who's a knight who rides around on a motorcycle.
Fuck the opening, man. The ending is where it's at, I think. The ending thing.
Wait, was that the dance?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was pretty great, too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the ending is a Bollywood-style dance in a classroom.
Well, what was it? It's like this is the dance to do if you're
acting defiant even though you failed a test.
That's it. Yes, I couldn't remember the specific dance it was. That was pretty great.
Oh, this is all live action as well.
Yeah, of
we
course.
We should probably mention that too.
I wonder if it'll change every week. You get a different pose, a different dance.
I'm hoping they go that far.
Because
this, after watching Love Rice, which I took off the schedule after...
I watched the second episode. I said, I'm going to give it a shot. And I cannot tell you what happened in that episode.
Well, all I came to realize was, I was like, oh, you need to know a lot about rice to get all the jokes.
Yeah, I assume it's just puns were missing.
So I was looking up names of rice and trying to find... So there's like one rice is chatting up a girl and... That joke relates to what the name of that rice means.
Like it's like a pun that's like chat
love,
up
yes.
or something. Yeah, yeah.
And I believe the cross-dressing joke at the end is because all those varieties of rice are cross breeds of rice.
Okay, I just thought that was a weird random joke, but yeah, okay.
This is it's too much homework for yours.
I want to learn about rice. I don't know about rice in the first place.
It's one of these things which would handily need some sort of what do they call them?
The big like note dumps.
All it makes you wish for like the Dottie subtitles for a translator's note as a paragraph that fills the entire screen.
Yeah, well, and Amigos, Eurosatsura, and other things used to come with like a pamphlet of like explanations of jokes or why they've chosen a particular translation.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, if you go to that stage, if you need supplementary material to explain why a show is funny, then maybe it wasn't for you to begin with.
It's not good translated humor,
And the only thing which did seem to be translated, I'm not even sure it was intended in the original script, of describing something as a rice riot.
Rice. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hard one to work out.
So, yeah, this was much better than Love Rice.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm absolutely shocked that Dwayne enjoyed it.
Wait, what's wrong with it?
Because there'll often be a comedy show that I enjoy and you'll be down on. Like Love Muko, Lovely Muko.
Well, I mean, I like parts of Lovely Muko. Okay. I just don't love it.
But what do you think of the... it's got Twin, because it came in a two-part package in Japan. Because that's from Koro Koro magazine.
Mm.
And then from Chow magazine, we had Pre Chi-chan.
I didn't enjoy this one as much.
Oh, see, I enjoyed this one more.
I like this one better than the teacher one as well. I feel that some of the gags that they were doing, or some of the kind of static humor they were doing in Pascal, that I've kind of seen a little bit recently. Indeed, he fisted in Australia season 2, so...
Okay, if it's similar to something else, yeah.
Maybe I'm still a little full up on that kind of humor for a little while. Whereas this was a refreshing dose of a different kind of weirdness.
Yeah, and this had the punchline at the end of the episode, which...
That was a good punchline.
Made me laugh out loud a lot.
That was like the best... I think that was easily the best joke. I agree with you there.
So, this story is about Chi-chan, as he gets called, because
his name is too long.
The gag of like he's an alien with a really long name, but he's not an alien. He's a endoterrestrial, not an extraterrestrial. He lives inside the Earth.
Is that a standard thing in Japan? Because I've seen like so many versions of mole men in different anime and whatnot.
You just saw one there in Pascal.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, because One Punch Man opens with them as well.
Hmm.
So he's decided to go up to the surface world because he wants to eat some sweets. He's heard all about the surface world sweets being so delicious.
And, yeah, he's willing to risk being dissected.
Yes.
To get at them sweets.
How many things do we watch or regularly enjoy that the main motivation of a lot of the characters is, I want to eat some nice sweets?
I suppose we could go through the list and go, yes, I don't want sweets.
That's not insane. We do. It doesn't seem to be like, you know... If while we're enjoying all these little things, that seems to be a pretty common motivating factor for main characters there.
Hmm.
I totally understand it, though. I mean, I would go to great lengths for kind of food I would like as
well.
Would
you shoplift from a convenience store like this little critter does?
No, I think that's a crime. So.
I guess it's illegal. He's just got here.
Well, everyone's giving him a real dirty look.
He hasn't got money. He hasn't got your human money.
Yeah, so he carefully sneaks into this convenience store and then finds the sweets, and then he just loses his mind and just starts gobbling them down in the shop as everyone's watching him.
I do like when he realizes that everyone's watching him. It's like, oh, crap, I'm going to get dissected. And he can't leave through the hole he came up through because he's too fat now.
Yes.
Which is not surprising considering how much he's seen him eat. Yeah.
And then, I forgot to make a note of
Girl's name, the purple-haired girl.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an S and a K, Saki, Suka, something like that.
Yuka.
And all her friends are taking the piss out of her because she's always helping people?
Yes. It's kind of like... Dork. Yeah, it's kind of like they're just sort of heading into puberty, so they've all got those sort of attitudes and they're picking on her a little bit. But they also say it's the nicest thing about her. And, yeah, she finds this creature who thinks she's going to dissect him. But instead, she helps him out. He faints, doesn't he? Yes, because that's how he comes to in her house. And he's shocked to discover that he's not wearing his underpants that he was wearing before. He'll never be able to get married now that she's seen him nude.
Like, he doesn't have any... Is it a he or a she? They don't have any junk, whatever it is.
It's anyway.
Yeah.
It's pretty... It's Chi-Chan.
Yeah, but it's missing its diaper that it was wearing before. But fortunately, she's knitted it. Or not... she sold it a pair of knickers, so it's grand.
Yeah. Cool pants.
And yeah, so she explains, oh, you could stay here, you can live in this part of the room. And he starts heading up to that part of the room, and she's like, no.
Sorry, I need to tell you something first.
Yes. And then we get up there, because all up to this point, we've thought, oh, this is a new thing for her. This is like throwing her world into disarray, encountering this weird creature. And then the final punchline is we discover there's already an alien living with her.
Living on the top bunk, yeah. The alien's kind of like, oh, awkward. That was a pretty good joke, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're going to call this bunk. Should I sleep somewhere else? Oh.
It was such a good subversion of expectations.
Because,
like, even though the aliens in the promotional material, you assume in this sort of series...
Oh, yeah, he's going to be introduced later.
Yeah, you'll meet one alien, then you meet another one. And yeah, we'll just gradually add the characters, not to have this weirdness already in the girl's life beforehand.
So the mole man is actually the least weird thing in her life.
Quite possibly, yes.
Mm.
Kind of, I watched back to back at Pascal, and while Pascal was fine, I did better, and I think overall, I think it kind of looked a lot better as well, personally.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So. Even though they're both OLM, but yeah.
Yeah, I think this had a little more something there. There's some good reactions of people just kind of recoiling in bafflement at the yellow blob running screaming through the convenience store, and they're just like, "What the fuck is this?"
So, do you think we have a place in our hearts for two different weird yellow blobs?
I think so. I think we can make room. What about a talking hippo, though? Do you have room for a talking hippo in Makaruna Aku no Gundan, episode 1 and 2. Episode 1 was Invasion. Yeah, Invasion. And episode 2 was It's a Talking Hippo. So this show is about an alien who has basically purchased a franchise for alien invasions.
Yeah, because he was... did he say he was an office worker or something?
Something
like
that. He
had some kind of crappy job in space. But he's leaving home for the first time, trying to make a do of it in this whole invasion thing.
So
I mean, like, we're going to invade Earth because it's like the easiest place to invade, apparently.
And it is kind of equating a UFO which invades Earth to like a McDonald's. It's
he's
in charge of the UFO, and he's got two younger assistants who work under him who look a bit like dogs.
Yeah.
And it turns out, yes, it's really easy to take over the Earth because he does it in the first episode.
They do it in, like, minutes.
They do, yes.
Seconds.
They get everybody to form a nice, orderly line.
Yeah, just gather them all up together. And they're like, boss, but there's a bit of them. It's like, what? It's like, oh, I'll come down. I'll see what's up. There's 7 billion people. It's like, oh, that's a lot of people. I didn't think there'd be so many is his problem. Yeah.
I'm going to destroy all these guys and be here all week.
Yeah.
Is it the second episode where he invites people into the UFO and they want to take their shoes off before he comes
in? Yeah, the one of the assistants, the scatty one, I guess, is kind of explaining the Japanese have this lovely tradition of taking off the shoes and they put them down so neat. And he's like, yeah, that's not the problem. We can't fit the 7 billion people in the UFO is the problem.
They do some. Well, I guess maybe they get Japan in there anyway.
Yeah. And he says he really wants to try some... is it sushi he wants to try?
He wants to try some sushi, yeah.
They go out to get some and they're like, oh, right, there's no one in the shops because we have everyone on planet Earth in this queue. So, okay, all the shopkeepers can go back so I can buy some sushi. And some guy says, hey, what about the guys who make the sushi? And it's like, what about the fishing industry? What about this? And it's like, okay, everyone related to sushi can leave. Everyone leaves.
Most people. Because there is a supply chain running throughout.
Yeah, what about the doctors who keep the sushi makers going? What about the taxi drivers? You know, everyone's technically kind of related to sushi.
It's almost kind of like the reverse of that who gets to stay in the nuclear bunker joke. Everybody, who gets to get out?
the only people who stay there are kind of wasters, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Hikikomori. They discover they've still got an infestation of Hikikomori in there. And they like it better than their flats, so they're going to stay in the UFO.
Oh, dear.
I enjoyed this. I like the design. I hadn't realized it's based on a comic by a voice actress.
Oh, okay.
It's the woman who plays... She's in Love Live and the Milky Homes. She plays the Nico character in Love Live. Yes.
I think my only problem with it would be I kind of really like the claymation at the end.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I kind of wish the whole show was that.
that being said, it doesn't look too bad for the rest of us.
No, not at all.
I actually, when I was looking up stuff for this for the spring preview, what I saw didn't really grab me. But
yeah, I was the same.
The
trailer made it look worse than the actual show is.
Yeah. It didn't really sell it.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by this. Yeah, that was another good one to add to the shorts. It's all good, great shorts. And then we get to Bono Bono episode 40. I want to meet my twin. And the great thing about this is, I think last week or the week before, there's the sequel episode to this we've got to look forward to.
Oh, hey. That's awesome.
Oh, is it in the new season?
Yeah, it's in the second episode of the new season. Follows up on this episode.
We're missing out. We're so far behind.
So Raccoon comes to them with the theory that everybody has two twins in the world.
So it's actually like a triplet, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I was like, if you have two twins, then that's a triplet. That's not a twin.
I've heard of this before, oddly enough.
It was in a manhwa, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't a manga. It was like, it was by a Korean... It was published in a Japanese magazine.
Okay.
And it was like, it's Kurokami, I think it's called.
Yeah, the one who was really good at punching, or boxing, yeah. I suppose.
It's sort of like Jet Li is the one where, like, you have two other people who are just like you in the world. Mm. The thing is, though, if two of those people, like, see each other, they will die a mysterious death, and then the third person will be empowered with their life force.
Yeah, so you'll be, like, multiplied by three as strong kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the same premise.
Yeah, right. I never heard of that twist, but I remember as a kid knowing the thing of like, oh, if you meet your doppelganger, then that's bad.
Yeah, that's a Western thing as well. I think it's bad luck to see your doppelganger. Only one, like the Highlander type situation, like one of you will die or something. I've definitely seen it in other things before, but. I did like, it's like, hey, Raccoon, what are you going to go do if you see your twin? Well, I'm going to go like this.
Yeah.
And they're all like, yeah, that makes sense.
I probably would too, yeah.
Bono has a much more involved plan when he meets his twin.
We'll do this and this, and when he cries because he misses his home, he's going to go to this tree and let him cry here.
It's like, dude, this got far too planned out.
They kind of get obsessed with getting Bono to meet his twin.
Well, he's got the best plan, I think. Yeah.
Oh, I like Chipmunk's plan for finding a twin, though.
I thought that was a really good plan.
Yeah,
it's lazy, but ingeniously lazy, you know?
We'll bully somebody by throwing sticks outside their house.
And so they do that to...
They do it to a warthog.
Wild boar.
It was a warthog, yeah.
When they come out of the house, we'll tell them that somebody who looks like Bono did it, and then he'll go and find that person. And then we'll
get him!
He runs off looking for a guy who's like, see? Easy. Raccoon's one is like so lazy it's actually dumb. Just writes out a sign saying, hey, I'm looking for my twin, and like a sign pointing to Bono.
Hey, it worked. Badger said he knew somebody who looked just like Bono.
What I thought he was going to do was say he's going to bring him home to see Bono's dad.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. I was like, you look a lot like your dad, Bono.
That was I thought that as well. So we all think exactly the same. But no,
okay.
He takes him to a character who we have never seen before and looks nothing like Bono.
It's like some sort of lady pig or something, isn't it?
He's got like a long tail as well. I don't know what it was.
Who looks very confused that they're there. Like, as confused as they are, I suppose.
And before all that, there was... Father Wolverine said that his
son... Oh, I seen a guy like Bono. Yeah. It was a hedgehog floating on his back on this river. Yeah. Come on, I'll show you. This was the river. And they're just standing there. It's like, he's not going to fucking float by again, necessarily.
Right.
And then he tells him that his son looks like Bono.
It's like, show up, son.
What do you mean? Like, you know, oh, I'm bottle. I'm so worried about stuff.
While pooping, obviously.
Very mean Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah. They're not impressed by that.
I think that's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. There wasn't really a lesson, but
no, you know. There's a good payoff. I've watched the second episode of the new season.
Okay, okay.
The payoff is pretty good to this.
Excellent.
Then final short: Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 28. The Matsunaga Typhoon makes landfall, in which we have an evil cackling competition.
That's pretty good.
And Chidori is embarrassed. At the end, it was a pretty good punchline. What the stuff happens? Oh, there's the sweets which might be poisoned. Lots of historical stuff from the narrator.
My favorite bit was the joke with the straight man saying, "Like, watch out, Lord Nobunaga. He might betray you." And it's like, little did he know that he would become the most prolific betrayer in the history of fucking Japan. And it's like, oh, that's kind of that's sad.
Yeah, and they run down like all these are the old reasons why Matsunaga is known as being evil, but then they also make sort of point out his good points as well.
Also, he likes pornography.
Yes.
Which is like, I mean, like, that's a good point to some people, I guess. But yeah.
It was a how-to guide. It was more the joy of sex rather than pornography.
I guess. Yeah.
She is sex positive. You think, no, she should have embraced that aspect of yourself.
Maybe it's just because he's grinning all the time. It seems sleazier.
It does, yes.
He's just happy. He wants to put his best face forward.
Yeah, I really like this episode, particularly just for the bit of them just cackling to each other, thinking they've
like getting in each other's face.
Yes.
Like thinking how they're going to mess the other person up.
Yes.
Yeah. Probably the only guy I've kind of come across so far is the same, kind of similar character design to Nobunaga himself. So it kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Shows what kind of level they're on.
Yep. There's not much else to add to that, I think, apart from it was. It felt I was learning something anyway, as I was laughing, as always.
Yes, which is
about
the right
yourself.
Way.
Yeah. Then on to Rage of Bahamut, Virgin Soul, episode 2, The Miserables, which I have to assume is a reference to Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Like, I just read it as The Miserables.
I did as well. I did.
It's because I'm used to seeing that word, I guess. Mm. Yeah, and, like, I think... I mean, like, I know they were probably the villains of the last thing, but if you don't feel sympathy for demons now, I think, you know, probably a joke.
Yeah. You feel sympathy for demons. You don't necessarily feel sympathy for Azazel. I do a good job.
No, not that. Necessarily. Going about it.
Yeah, he's making a point, but then he makes it in a very bad way, and then gets a rocket punched in the face.
Yeah. He's constantly shouting, and he's like, you know, agree with me, for God's sake, agree with me. Like,
and she's just trying to stay away from him because she's just getting horny.
Yeah, he's always getting up in her face and saying, "If you're not our side, you're on there. You want to put the status quo, and you're just like all the rest of it." And he's just like, you know, trying to not.
And he keeps accidentally saying things that could be misconstrued, like, "You need to join up with me." And she's like, "Huh?" It's like, "So we can fight, guys." It's like, "Yeah, you know." I did like the introduction of your one's friend. What was his name? Rocky.
Rocky. Yes.
That was fucking great.
I thought they've got a tiny little pair of dungarees for him to wear.
With a face on it, so you could tell, like, that he's a happy hand. Oh, that was great. But that rocket punch was kind of like, I was like, yeah, you kind of deserve that, dude. Mm.
Kaiser's off the case.
Yeah.
Gotta bring in the cool black ninja guys instead.
The Onyx Knights.
I assume they're the same guys who invaded... I'm going to call it Heaven. I'm not exactly sure the names of places.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering when, like, you know, the head of those guys walked into the king's throne room. He had, like, the to Michael Stipe, like, makeup over his eyes.
Because they
wear the mask.
It
blacks out the eye holes like what Batman does.
Yeah, I was like, actually, that makes sense. It's less dumb when you think about it in that regard. But they've put in the case, and obviously he says that he feels like your man's up to something, so he puts a tail on him.
Yeah.
Because it's like he can't have screwed up that much by mistake.
And you kind of like he's going out at night, and he's, I guess, again following on Azazel, who's raiding the house and murdering all the people inside there. And he's like, "What are you doing in there?" "Oh well, I gotta do what I gotta do, man. Because you know what's in this house? The moonlight pierces your windows." It's like it was like horror show of dissected demon bodies in glass cases.
Yeah, like initially it's like, holy fuck, this guy, this Azazel guy's an asshole. And then as soon as that's revealed, it's like, oh yeah, fuck those guys. It's like, yeah, okay, I see why you totally murdered all those people.
You can now see why Chi-Chan was frightened about coming to the surface world.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Some gross ass stuff in there, in that room. But yeah, your man's more so wants to get Azazel. Like, just leave, dude, because you're making things worse.
Yeah, and also I think he's like, also you're in danger as well.
And he just says he knows who he is as well.
Yeah,
yeah. So. They've got ninjas after you, man. Ninjas, look out!
Ninja knights, nightjas? I'm not sure.
And there's a little something going on there with Azazel's little buddy.
I forgot.
Mugaru. Mugaro. When they get surrounded by the ninjas at the end, he switches off their powers and raises Azazel to the heavens. So it's like, oh, because earlier on they mentioned that he had his throat crushed and his wings torn off. So you think at the time, oh,
he's demon, a demon.
But no, it seems like he's an angel.
I'm wondering if he's like a cross between the two, because he had two different color eyes.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking as well, which would make sense that he has magic that is really good for turning off other people's magic.
And later the king refers to him as a holy child I lost track of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We also see Nina's home, village, everybody are sort of humans who turn into dragons.
I love that she's not some sort of, she's the legendary hero who can turn into a dragon when she gets horny. It's like, no, everyone can turn into dragons in this village.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. There's some things floating around there thinking, like, Nina, like, what's her deal? What's her, like, you know, like, hidden backstory? And, you know, is there some more links to the people from the previous series? Because Favreau's in this series, too. And, you know,
is she
and,
a reincarnation of Bahamut or something
like
that?
It's something like that. And it's like, no, it's just that. Like, it doesn't add up. There's no mystery here. Those guys from last series are in here because they were, like, legendary heroes who saved the world 10 years ago. That's probably why they're still around.
Yeah,
going to be in this show as well. There's no kind of big mystery to it.
That was nice. Yeah, that was a good reveal. And I'm thinking the suggestion, like, and it, the way it kind of comes about is like she's writing, "Dearest Mother, everyone in this town is so nice." But the dragons seem to have different ways of turning into dragons, because she says she hasn't revealed the secret of how she turns into a dragon. And I was wondering, do they all have like a trigger for them? You know,
possibly, yeah. And also, Azazel thinks she's got demon blood, and she's like, "This is the first I've heard of this. What this? Are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So his question is: are these a different sort of dragon to whatever Azazel's familiar with? Being as they turn free, they seem to turn from some of them seem to turn from human to dragon very freely.
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
But it's only the children we see doing that. So maybe they can do that as children, and then at some point.
Well, I was wondering, like, changes. The one kid jumps into the water and is like. Like, is that his trigger? And another like guy is like trying to scare his sister or whatever with like a worm, and she turns into a dragon. And I'm like, is that them trying to get the hang of their powers by using the little triggers?
It probably is just something just got to like just get the hang of it. Maybe she was just a long time trying to do it.
Well, she had to become sexually aware first, I guess. And there's so many cute boys here.
Yes, the shot of those two, the two guys working
the
by
dock
the river.
Workers.
Yeah.
Still glistening in the sun over there rippling pecs.
Oh, while she's having lunch. Yeah, that was great.
And this looks really good as well.
Yeah, it's obviously not as... it still has some action, but it's not as action-packed as the other one, but it's still really good-looking show.
Yeah, and Nina's facial expressions are just...
She can
hilarious.
Scrunch her face up in any kind of direction. It's pretty great.
Top notch. Oh, we have the return of like the butt rock for the opening.
Yes.
Oh, was that in the prior one as well?
Yeah, it was like really intense metal, because this is a serious like fantasy team with dragons and knights and blood and warfare. Like, but it's mostly about like a thirsty dragon.
And the ending is some sort of platform game.
Well, I thought it was an endless runner or something. You know, where you just have to jump over the obstacles kind of thing.
Well, it's based off a mobile game.
So. I was like, I like the ending theme. I mean, like the opening theme looks great, but I like the ending theme better. It just seemed kind of nice. Also, it had the little hand running after.
Yes, it was her, the hand, the duck, and a character we've not met yet.
Yeah, some weird puffball thing.
Yeah.
The adorable mascot character.
They have so many mascot characters. They're they're spoiled for them.
Right, next up, My Hero Academia, episode 16, In Their Own Quirky Ways. This was a good episode of My Hero Academia.
Yeah, I forgot the bloody chick after I said I would, but this has to cover a couple of chapters in the manga,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would have thought so. It's really good. When people say this show is kind of slow, I'm just like, no. Have you seen any other shonen show?
Yeah, well, that was the complaint level that the previous series were. That almost was the rate of adaptation there. But it's really getting into gear right now. They've got more episodes to cover, so, and they've got more material they can adapt from. But yeah, why wouldn't just let's get this the pace and the score and all the, really from the off.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, it's a race, so it depends on having momentum going forward. So you want to convey that as well in the adaptation.
It definitely comes across, yeah, yeah. It's kind of race for the leaders, but also everyone else trying to keep up.
Yes.
Yeah. We see a different kind of obstacles turn up now, and I've seen your kids from your classes and how they surmount these things, and often how the obstacles play just right into their own particular power or ability there.
Well, yeah, I think it's to give everyone a chance to shine.
Though Ajiro is annoyed that the guy from 1B has essentially exactly the same power as he's got.
He runs off crying. It's like, I have trouble standing out enough as it is. Where they both pop out of the fucking robot with exactly the same line.
Yes.
And it's he's a bit, and what's the DJ guy called again?
Present Mike.
Present Mike basically gives them exactly the same power description.
If it was anybody else but me, they would have surely been killed by being crushed by the robot. And then Kai has the exact same opinion of it.
Yeah. That was pretty great. I did like the gadget girl showing up. Glad she's finally shown up. And I didn't realize it until the actual seeing an animation. I was like, wait, she basically has the things from Attack on Titan.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't occur to me for some reason.
Well, she's hover boots.
The hover boots are a good fucking addition to that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the support department are allowed to use all the gadgets because...
As long as they invented them, yeah.
As long as they invented them themselves, because obviously they're trying to make an impression to companies who hire support people with support powers.
I like the way the guys from the business class, and after a speech from All Might going I didn't need to worry about Midori at all, he's going to be just fine. The business guys are all fucking how would you market him? That kind of thing, rather than fucking racing.
Before the guys told them, and it's those kids in your class, there is something, kind of shadowy, faces, what they got planned there.
They're going to be challengers, yeah.
Just going to figure out how would you make money off of these guys? Well, I do it this way.
Well, he's not marketable by his face. That's out. That kind of thing. And it's the business class. Everyone has a part to play.
Yeah. Deku as well, because it's irritated. He's thinking, okay, I can't go using the power just yet. So I've got to think of another way to get through this race. And his strategy is to just act like a lunatic. He's doing some incredibly dangerous things.
So he's robbed a piece of armor off one of the robots. And he's running around with that tied to his back for most of it. Because using his own human non-fucking superpower enhanced strength, he actually managed to chop one of the robot's limbs off with that thing.
Yes.
Which I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he's ripped.
He has no special way of getting across at the rope, can he? He just gets on that rope and starts hauling himself across.
Hauling himself in a piece of metal across, yeah.
Yeah.
But the minefield, which the reveal of that is great. It's a minefield. Yes. It won't fucking kill you, but it will scare the shit out of you.
And the logic's great that it puts the people who are in the front at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Gives everyone else a chance to catch up.
Midori has the crazy plan to... And I love that they only explain it after the thing, kind of standard shonen thing. But
you get the idea, though.
Oh, yeah. He seems to just go at the ground starting digging, and everyone's like, what the fuck is wrong with Midori? Has he gone mad? It's no, he's going to dig up a bunch of mines, like slam the shield down on it like in Zelda and like fly off the explosion.
And as you say, he's copying Bakugo's explosion quirk.
Because Bakugo's just basically flying the entire way.
But, by the end, he starts fighting with Todoroki.
Yeah, the only thing that stops him is when Midoriya takes the lead from them.
Yes.
What another crazy fucking move. Oh, that was sweet.
Mm.
But then the gag at the end of Minoru attaching himself to Momo as his way of getting there.
Like, he got a pretty high score for that altogether, and she mostly did it through skill. Oh, I forgot she fucking met a cannon.
She did, yes.
Yes.
That was amazing. Like, off screen, and all of a sudden she just has, like, a freaking pirate ship cannon beside her. Good stuff.
We got to see a lot of the other class people.
Mm.
There's the guy in Class 1B whose head's a speech bubble. I think it's my favourite design from the Class 1B characters.
Which one's that speech bubble?
I didn't see that guy. Wow.
Oh, I was looking out for him because I knew it existed. I was just wondering whether they're going to show him this early. But
His
first name is Manga.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'm going to have to watch out for that guy now.
Which is harder. Obviously, just going to pause and go over the crowd shots all the
way. Oh, yeah. I paused in the crowd shots as well. I was like, there's a shark man, there's a tusked Batman, that kind of thing.
No, this was when they were going running through the results at the end, when they quickly run through all the...
Yeah, who came what place.
Yeah, who came in which place. Because then that pays off.
42 or something, yeah.
Yeah. Into the next round, we learn he's going to be cavalry.
Mm.
And they can form teams of 2 to 4, but you get points for defeating people based on where they finished.
The guy who came 42nd is worth 1 point, and then
is all the way up to, is it 10 million points?
10 million,
10 million points for the guy for Midoriya, who's freaking out because everyone starts looking at him with like 10 million points, eh? So whoever gets his thing basically fucking wins.
Right? Yes.
Oh dear.
Mm.
And luckily, all of 1A got through, I think, because Yuga was right at the bottom on 2.
Yeah, he was really frustrated at the bottom. I did like the way... what's your man's name with the jet legs?
Ida.
He was really disappointed that he didn't do better. Yes. I think he was in the top 10, but it's kind of like, what the fuck? My thing is speed. How the fuck have I not won this?
He's got to fight robots and go to some minefields.
Yeah, the way he got across the tightrope thing was the really awkward escape. That was great.
I was kind of like in this little interaction there, like Ochako and is it Mina who's like the pink slow girl?
Yes.
So they got kind of that nice little buddy thing going on there. That's kind of apparent from they did their training together as well.
So. Yeah, it's nice that kind of like suggesting that they're hanging out in scenes we're not seeing is actually playing into them hanging out together in the race. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I'd seen May in later chapters of the comic, the support steampunk girl.
Mm.
And Ochako doesn't like her. And obviously we see in this that Ochako doesn't like her right from the start. Like instant dislike to her.
Maybe it's the fact that they're competing for the same thing. They're just both trying to make some money.
Yeah, because I thought it was in the later chapter. It seemed like, she did resents her because she's overly familiar with Deku. But no, it's even before she's met Deck. She's like, I don't seem to like her at all.
An instant dislike to her. Yeah. Mm.
Which is fine, because honestly, Ochako is, for most of the first season, is portrayed as being just nice, but has her personality quality. But she's getting a bit more varied personality in these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else to add? I think that was pretty much it. Nothing sinister is happening yet.
No, it just whizzes by.
Yeah, like, well, we do see Shigaraki watching it on his computer at home.
Getting really frustrated. Yes. Yeah, because everyone recognizes him, Midoriya, from the from the villains attacking and everything. Yes. Well, they recognize the whole class, I suppose.
Yeah, and they kind of make a point that these Class 1A is knows to use their powers better because they've been forced to use them in a life and death situation.
Yeah, they know that they kind of know the stake, so this is minor to them in one regard. Yeah.
Even though, of course, Midoriya didn't even use his powers at all.
Well, fucking came first without using the powers. That's
Well, his main powers is just is a smart and that's having it. A encyclopedic knowledge of quirks and their applications.
Yeah. Coming up with crazy plans.
And CQC. You can do that too.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, let's do the things only some of us watched. Attack on Titan was episode 28 this week, was it? Southwestward.
We're folded in as well because Dwayne, you hadn't seen 27 last week. So did you get both of them?
I got both of them in, yeah. I had to take a break between them because I was too tense after 27 to watch 28.
Well, 27 was good because you get like a little bit of a win.
There's a little bit of a breather there. The most tense scene is where they're kind of just riding the horses through the night with torches going like, oh God, we're going to fucking die, aren't we?
Yeah. 27 was good. Like, I really liked that episode because it's like an episode about Sasha, the potato girl who's always hungry.
It's smaller stakes because it's only, like you said, the one, it wasn't like 10-foot high, was it? It was enough to fit inside the door of a house.
It fits inside of a door, like, yeah.
But it's still a huge bastard, and she's just, while it's currently very slowly chewing on a kid's mother who's just there paralyzed with fear.
That was unsettling.
It was really bad.
I really made my skin crawl, that did.
just the slowness and the calmness of it, but the overwhelming threat. And her trying to save the kid from the town and like panicking, but trying not to panic in front of the kid. It would have been nearly funny if it wasn't the fact that this is actually a terrifying scene.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's tying into like her kind of backstory where before she joined the Corps, she like lived out in the woods with her dad. And I get that the Japanese that they're speaking in those scenes that it's more of a colloquial term, but.
Yeah,
it's rendered in the subtitles. It's like, dang, David, Sasha, I told you to stay out of the villains. We need them for the winter. But Paul, all these like interlopers are coming in and they're poaching all of our stock. Well, yeah. Sasha, them titans have come in and made a dang old mischief. We got to look out for these folks. They don't know nothing about trying to survive out in the wilderness.
Yeah, I guess they have to fucking write the subtitles differently because, again, it cuts back to another scene where she's in training with the guys and one of the girls is complaining as to why she talks in an overly polite way. And it's because she's kind of embarrassed by her accent, seemingly.
Yeah, and also, like, well, like, she's trying to, you know, be less... The way she talks, you know, and want to help people, you know, as her father told her to do, it's probably better to be more polite and competent, which she's doing, like, with the kid when they're trying to escape, but the kid is still paralyzed with fear, and she's like, there, saying, come on, let's go, let's run away. Until she goes, I said get out of here, dang
damn it. I said get... yeah, and that's the thing that kind of wakes the kid up a bit. And she decides to take on a titan by herself with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Well, she's pretty badass.
Kind of just like slow it down, and it's like, okay, got one arrow, can't miss. Okay, can't miss. Jump and stab him in the eye with the arrow.
Pretty good. Pretty darn great. And it actually, like, it relieves the tension off it a bit at the end when she actually meets her father and a group of other guys kind of coming the other way. Because the kid, they met the kid, picked her up, and they were told, like, there's another person to save, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, fun that they got off.
A little victory, yeah.
The kid, like her dad and most of the villagers are all right because they evacuated. And it's like, again, it's just a little win. You don't feel like it's entirely just hopeless.
Yeah. But then.
They get Connie. I thought it was going to be a bit more about him because it's in his hometown. And we get some. It's more about his. I guess the mystery developing here, really.
So the town is wrecked, but there's not a fucking spatter of blood or thing anywhere, and the horses are still in the stables?
Yeah. And
so it's like, did the people escape, or what happened?
There's a titan landed right on top of Connie's house. His family nowhere to be seen. His house is smashed. It was his thing, titaner. And they're wondering, how did it get there? Because if you look at it, it's got, you know, the big body and stuff, but it's got wee little arms and things, and it can't get up. So
yeah, it's just trapped there in a like a, in the stupid Titan grin that it has.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like they don't even do anything. They just go like, I would have been like, should we not kill this thing?
It's not going to go anywhere, I suppose.
It's just freaking me out, man.
I mean, just got focused on getting out of here, you know. And as they're going, it just says in very broken, weird voice to Connie, like just to him. It's like, welcome home. And it's like, whoa, what? It's like, Titan, talk to me. What's that, Connie? Titan, talk to me. We got time, man. Let's get out of here. And
they don't know, and he kind of, your man snaps him out of it a bit. And I think it's of the thing of like, listen, doesn't matter if this is Titan talk, and doesn't matter if we can find your family or not. We need to keep moving. Mm. And it does snap him out of it long enough. It's kind of put that little mystery on hold, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, what they've done now to evacuate anybody that they've seen, what they're doing is they're, okay, we got to find where the breach in the wall is that they all got in it. And the two separate teams that go there, you know, they've said Dwayne before, very tensely, just going through the darkness. But
so the deal is like Titans can't move at night, but if you run into one in the middle of the road, it's probably going to fucking eat you, I guess.
Yeah, it's something like they need, I guess, sort of like a lizard or something like that. They just need the sunlight and the heat to move around or about that. They go Stratus and then they meet the other team coming the other way. It's like, huh, did you guys find a hole? No, did you find a hole? Did you miss it? No, but there's no hole. What the hell happened here?
Mm.
Like, it seems to me that the obvious implication here is that we know that people can turn into Titans at will, given that they have the ability to. Well, now it seems, what if there was some process by which the average person could be transformed into a Titan? And
I was also wondering, were they like airdropped in there? Because that Titan did land on his house.
No. Yeah. Like, if you're going to look at this, like, you know, there's a lot of parallels to, like, your zombie apocalypse movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I thought, well, it's obviously probably a matter of time before there had, like,
the thing that people are Titans is people can't be turned. Who to trust. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that Attack on Titan does a really good job of, is taking that zombie apocalypse idea that's been done to death and putting some interesting twists on it to make it fucking terrifying again. So it's been doing a good job of that. And I think that's what they're building up to. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah. The squad are, but that's they're making their caravan to the next, like, safe place anyway, and they're trying to put a plan together. Obviously, there's a hole in the wall, or as they assume anyway at this stage, so you got to plug it up with something. There could be a big wall, Paul, so what do we do? Well, according to Hange, I don't know how you say her name, Hange, based on her, like, stories of, like, you know, a chunk of Titan
skin. Oh, the hardened Titan skin. Yeah.
It's the exact same stuff as the walls. And as we've known, Titans are in the walls and armor that observed. It seems weird. There's no kind of like join in the wall. There's no kind of like a thing, obvious like signs of it being kind of worked together. So it's like, while after like all the walls are like petrified Titan skin.
And it would make kind of sense as well. Like, Titans don't really attack Titans. So if you make the wall out of the thing that they won't attack, it's not just a big wall to get in their way, it's a deterrent. You can't tear down these walls because you don't attack your own kind, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So the plan is, well, seeing as Aaron can turn into a Titan and this substance doesn't seem to dissolve
after you turn back. Mode, yeah.
We'll go out there, have him turn into a Titan and then stick that in the wall and it'll just like,
have him plug the wall with his body.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sure. And he's kind of worried that it's like he won't be able to do it, but it's kind of like we don't have a choice in this situation. Yeah.
They're prepping that to go, and then, like, they can't get any more, like, answers out of the priest. He's saying, you know, and, you know,
they've shown him the horror of everyone having to fucking evacuate. And he seems like he wants to help, but he's still refusing to.
There's something else, like, you know, I can't say to go. There's someone else's. Because of someone else's will, I cannot say this. She's climbing up not because he's deciding it, but something's kind of compelling him not to talk.
Yeah, but he still wants to give them enough information about who could tell them more potentially.
Yeah,
and it's someone who's in their own team.
Yes, it's in their own team, and it's been, you know, it's people just happen to have holed up in a castle, and you know, and thinking it'd be safe at night. But Titans arrive at this. It's like, Titans can't move around at night. What the hell is going on?
Mm.
The Beast Titan is here as well. What the hell is going on with that? He just goes over to the wall, just kind of scaling up it.
Mm.
And they're in that big fucking mess. It's like a lot of, kind of after a little bit of calm and maybe a little bit of kind of just a little bit of a gain from the last episode, and it's all kind of
it's all gone to shit again.
The tablecloth's been pulled off the table. Everything's been thrown into disarray again. Like all the rules been upended, and now you don't know what's what anymore.
Yeah, still really. I mean, like I'd say enjoying this show, but it's a very fucking stressful watch for me.
it's good. This is really the ideal version of it. No, the last series had all problems, ups and downs, but they really seem to have fucking really fun. Hit it on the head this time around.
Definitely. So far, so very, very good. It's kind of the stuff that I was initially really interested in the show for. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I find the Stormbeat thing is going to give you that really kind of unsettling, kind of skin crawly feeling, and that's really, really good. What do you think of like the ending sequence as well?
The freaky fucking child fucking singing thing. I haven't been freaked out by an end thing since like Monster, I don't think.
Yeah.
So much, you know?
The imagery as well is really good. It's like old kind of medieval style manuscripts.
Giants eating people, yeah.
Of eating people as well, but also seems to be a lot of kind of science that there was some kind of unholy pact between humans and Titans.
Yeah.
To be an implication based on what's going on there. So a lot of fear of the old blood type of imagery.
There seems to be like an implication from the intro and outro that there is like, this is like a very old thing because in the intro they have a bunch of dinosaurs and shit and they're equating them to Titans. So is this like a thing that keeps happening in history or something?
Is it some kind of, is this like
a cycle of nature or something?
Some kind of power of evolution or something like that.
Mm. That being said,
that being said, I know that in the comic they've still not answered a lot of his questions. So.
Yeah, sure.
But I know, he could have said, just throw a little something of this in here. Just sprinkle some of that in there to get the old, get the old mouse wet with anticipation and speculation about what this may or may not be.
Yeah, and it's one thing like to answer the questions, which can get kind of annoying when a thing doesn't do that. But it's keeping that kind of tension and pace up, and it's so far done a very good job of kind of having I know it's only two episodes or three episodes in, but it's done a good job of doing that kind of waxing and waning of the tension, which is really nice.
Yeah, anyway, talking of tension and pace and answering questions. Hey, but episode 29.
Okay.
In which questions are sort of answered to a point.
Really?
The episode's called It's Fine, It's Totally Awesome, but it poses some more questions as well. So, in this episode, we meet, again, the cybernetic screw man known as Mandriver, who we saw in the first episode.
Yeah.
And Lord Neji Kill, I think his name is, the other version of Neji. So we learn they're both versions of Neji, Neijiru, the hero.
Mm-hmm.
But they're alternate reality versions of him from when something happened different in there. When they were him, something happened differently. It's not they've not come back in time to stop it happening. It already hasn't happened to the main character in Haybot, because we then get flashbacks to their versions of earlier episodes of Haybot.
Okay. Are they still wacky, or are they...
They are still wacky, yes. And also, the Haybots... So they turned this way because they lost Haybot at various points. So in one, it was like, it was the episode where Haybot ran away from home. He never came home in that episode. And the other one was the episode when they went to hell. They never got Haybot back, and Haybot's got, I thought that was all a dream. Saying we established that was a dream last episode. But also, the Haybots they've got don't look like the Haybot in this universe, but they do look like other characters in this universe.
Okay.
Which is further confusing. Anyway, so apparently the tension between the two is that one wants to screw reality tighter and one wants to loosen reality.
Okay.
And then a giant screw turns up after stealing the Screw King's loincloth. And I don't think they give the screw a name. It has got a name, but I don't think it gets a name this episode. And this screw goes, "It's fine, it's fine, it's totally awesome." That's pretty much all it says all the time. They discover it's got a button on the bottom of it. It's nice to press the button. They keep on pressing the button. They press the button a lot and a lot and a lot, and then mayonnaise comes out.
Yeah.
God.
It's because it looks like an upside-down bottle. We have to tap the bottom. So nothing lewd at all.
I just hate mayonnaise. Okay.
Then they really discover they can screw this screw into the Haybot and his brother's heads, and they become extra powerful. Then, meanwhile, the three rundown Vokabots are wandering around, and they go off somewhere, and then the girl looks like the girl from The Ring follows them, and they've suddenly turned into these three combining giant robot forms that have appeared in the show before. And they're fighting a giant alien, which apparently is another version of Najaru, is this giant alien. Then the woman, the princess we saw in the first episode and has shown up throughout the series so far, realizes this is being observed and tries to kill the girl who looks like Sadako. But she's saved by the screw, who says, "It's fine, it's fine. It's totally awesome." And then that's kind of the end of the episode. So you're like, oh, we've established who the villain is. It is the princess, because she's just trying to kill one of the regular characters in this comedy show. It turns out the two future versions of our main character are just as goofy as him, because they all start hugging Haybot as soon as they see him, because their Haybot's missing. Mm. And their pasts are just as goofy as his was. It's just
They took a dark turn, sort of.
Mm. And we know from their end credits that this screw apparently belongs to their mother, but she's not showed up in the present, so is there some time travel going on? Anyway, it answered some questions. It kind of established what they're going to do, what it means by tightening reality and untightening reality. I don't know. But that is apparently what these things which look like boogers and testicles are trying to do.
Okie dokie.
That's Haybot for you. Oh, and also, yes, so basically did everything. It had this story, it had goofy gags, and it sold you this new toy you can go out and buy in the shops for your Haybot.
Perfect. That's all it has to do, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then that brings us to Tiger Mask Double, episode 27, A Deadly Match Against King Tiger. This had some ropey animation in places, but it was a really good episode.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think it saved it for those few seconds of like really fucking cool animation.
Yeah, it was pretty bad when it had him like in the corner. It kind of goes for the wide shot, and you see, it's like a fucking like an 8-bit 2D beat 'em up that's going closer together.
I had multiple people telling me it was promotion for the new Fire Pro. Which... But yeah, so he has the battle against King Tiger. It turns out it's going to be in unified rules, so it's mixed martial arts.
Oh yeah, it's not not a three count pin.
No,
it's just rounds. It's knockout, technical knockout, or
submission,
or give up. Submission. That's it. Yeah. But they say there's 10 rounds. So, but are they counting hits?
No.
Or is it just like wrestling will last this long?
10 rounds, So
it's from UFC rules. So.
Yes.
Okay.
But twice as many rounds, so it's kind of more like old UK wrestling rules in that part.
Right, right.
Which in part, mixed martial arts partly comes from that in the first place.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's kind of the crux. But then meanwhile, we've got the Miracles invading New Japan.
Being real jerks. Ooh. They're injuring people with all their fouls.
Okada's like, let me take care of this. I'm the champion. I should be the one who takes care of it. Tiger Mask manages to beat King Tiger eventually after taking one hell of a beating.
Mm. And that's his last contractual match.
Yes. And then he says, can we get a fight now against Tiger the Great?
Okay. Sure we can. Sure you can. If. He signed this contract.
Yes.
And the B-plot is, I guess Kevin's gone to his friend in the hospital. He's like, hey, check it out. I'm fucking Miracle number 2. We're really fucking shit up over there. See you later, buddy.
Yeah, and Fukuhara Mask has to, like, bail after calling Tiger Mask's match because he's apparently got to go and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
She's on the card for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Oh,
show,
that was it,
so
yes.
I guess you go out, go out and do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, he is. But not as Fukuhara Mask.
Yeah, so the Miracles have kept saying, he's like, we're just going to keep multiplying blah, 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 into cameras whenever they can.
Yes, because we go back to New Japan where it's kind of the end of the match, they've been disqualified.
Yeah.
And then Miracle 3 shows up along with his new ally, Tiger Mask.
Oh my what? God, they're standing beside turn. Each other. They're clearly friends. That's wrestling parlance, isn't it? Yes. Standing beside him? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're all... Yeah, so there's now four members of this Miracle team.
One of them not in the theme, but, you know.
Yes. And the New Japan guys are shocked. How could he do this to them? I'm sure if they recognize Fukuhara Mask, they'd be asking that as well, because Miracle yeah. 3 is clearly Fukuhara Mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like the question is like, oh my God, has Tiger fucking turned heel? And it's like, yeah, but to get in the thing, and obviously Fukuhara Mask is helping him out. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously you have your man...
Takamosh.
Like, yeah, it's like you're trying the same shit I tried and that got me in hospital, that yeah. kind of thing.
We'll get yourself killed.
Yeah, Kevin brings him his mask, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah, he says, yeah, hope I'll see you soon kind of thing.
Yeah,
he still thinks he's the good guy.
after he's lost his mask in a Mask versus Mask match, how can you put it back on?
He could call himself Tiger the Black or something.
Something like that, yeah. Tiger Mask 2.
There's like a million fucking Tiger Masks thing. It's like Tiger Mask versus King Tiger, and then the crowd are going, come on, Tiger Mask. Tiger, Tiger. And it's like, who are they shouting for?
You should be called Masked Tiger. You should put a mask over the mask. I put a domino mask on the tiger mask.
So or how about a tiger wearing a mask? That'd be a masked tiger. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think the MMA match is kind of a commentary on sort of the Antonio Inoki era, sort of early 2000s, I think, when he started sending wrestlers into MMA matches and they'd get their asses kicked.
Yeah, it's a very different thing.
But also, like, the Japanese attitude of somebody can get over having their ass kicked if you just show the fire in the match, like Tiger Mask is doing. That's why King Tiger seems confused about why the Japanese crowd is cheering for the guy who's losing.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, that's about the only bit of characterization King Tiger gets. Other than that, he's just, yes. like, a beat stick.
Yeah, he wears some suave clothes. He's got a neat design with, like, one ear is torn on his mask.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's... When he and Tiger are doing that press conference, they're both wearing cool suits, but he's wearing, the big popped open collar.
Yes.
Thing. He's a bit more 70s, I think. Yeah. Really fun episode.
It's a good episode if you liked seeing masked men in suits. That was...
And we do.
It's always a good look.
Mm.
And then finally, Dragon Ball Super episode 86, Fist Cross. I'm sure it should be Fists Cross, but Fist Cross for the first time. Android number 17 versus Son Goku, in which Son Goku is forced to talk to somebody like an adult, which seems to be the theme for these recruiting.
Yeah, grow the
things.
Fuck up, Goku. I was like, hey, we've never met, but you're not still trying to kill me, right? Like, no, yeah. Like, I got a job and family and shit now, dude. It's like, cool, wanna fight? Like, I'm actually fighting these poachers right now, if you could give me a hand. I'd appreciate it, thanks. So the poachers have I don't know how well they're funded. I guess the price of Minotauro's horn is so good that you can, you know, put a down payment on for an army of tanks.
The last one on Earth.
Yeah, it does feel like this. It does feel like Goku is like, oh, what, those monsters I used to beat up training actually are living creatures.
Yeah, yeah, because he's very much, we must protect the animals in the forest, and all the cute animals are watching as he's beating the shit out of poachers. And Goku's kind of like, oh, that was bad then.
I shouldn't chop off dinosaur tails and
assume it'll grow back.
Sticks over a fire. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He kind of wants to fight this Minotaurus when he sees.
Yeah, he does.
Wait,
except he's like, don't fucking fight it because we'll kill it. And it's the last fucking one, you asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, then they have a duel, which is pretty good.
That's pretty well animated, yeah.
Mm.
And then he's like, oh, you want to come and take part in this tournament?
No.
No.
No, but it's 10 million. It was a 10 million I said before. It was 10 million zenny. That's the price. It's like, I get a good fucking wage out of this, dude. I don't need the fucking money. But it's like, everyone might die. Oops.
Well, no, he's like, I wasn't supposed to tell you this. And then I think Android 17 makes a pretty good argument. Everyone's wiped out at the same time, it doesn't matter. If I leave and we win, but because I'm not here, the animals get poached.
Mm.
I failed in my job.
But it's okay. I get 2 10-year-old boys to guard the island for you.
yeah, that's Goku's fucking solution. It's like I'll get Goten and Trunks. It's like, I know Trunks. Who the Ooh. Fuck is Goten? It's like, no, not that Trunks. It's like a baby Trunks. Are you fucking serious, dude? dear.
And then the Sumanians in a cupcake.
Yeah.
Yes. And we get a little bit of Beerus at home having his last meal before we have to go take care of this.
Yeah, every hour. Like napping and eating. This is his life for the next 2 days.
It's just like, sir, would you please decide on one thing or the other? I'll do what I want. It's going to be the last thing I eat for all forever.
Straight asleep. That was amazing.
That feels like lines written by somebody who owns a cat.
Oh, they also is it Dene? Dende? Dende, that's it. I always forget his name. They introduced, or not introduced, they kind of hinted towards Oob being around.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fucking great, actually. I was wondering, was he written out of it entirely? But it's like, no, that's still going to happen.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
It is, yeah. I wonder if that will be how it ends going into that.
Well, it sets them up something to do for the next thing anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be introduced this arc based off all the fucking promotional material. Yes. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
Also, the biggest revelation here for me was that whole, like, God's house in the sky. I think he can move around wherever he wants.
I was thinking, like, hey, do you want me to take you there? It's like, yeah, cool. It's like, okay, I'll just move my entire fucking flying house thing. And it's like, Goku's like, I wasn't surprised Goku was like, could you just like point me in the direction? Because I can fly and teleport.
No. Please, don't tire yourself out. You're an honored guest here. So what's up with you? How are the kids? I wouldn't know, man. Sorry.
dear. Yeah, good episode.
Comments on Crunchyroll were arguing about power levels. It's like, how can Android 17 fight against Super Saiyan Blue?
Because he's been defending an island from aliens and tanks for fucking years now. Whereas Goku spent most of those years fucking dead.
And then people were like, well, he was like, yeah, it didn't take Frieza very long to train himself up to that level, so stop complaining.
Well, weren't the androids built to kill Goku? So presumably they're pretty good at fighting him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas over in One Piece comments, they were arguing about the relative poison resistance of Luffy.
He can't poison rubber.
As shown in the Impel Down arc, he actually succumbed to poison in this amount of time.
Yeah. So not paying attention to the best parts of the plot, like the sweet fighting.
Well, to be fair, the entire episode was about Luffy being poisoned.
Oh, okay.
It's that chapter. It's the one where he's eaten the skin of the fish that he shouldn't have eaten.
Yeah.
Right, I think that's everything. Anything else? Nobody else watched anything else?
Okay, I watched the second thing in Magical Manoyama. I still can't really get into it. It's not a particular thing. Second board.
The what? The magical?
What's the thing called? It's like the tourism thing where you want
Sakura Quest.
Sakura Quest, yes.
You get the episode name and the show name and stuff, I think.
Oh, I think that's probably what I'm doing. Yeah. They watched the second thing, Abort. And yeah, I think it's like you guys said, it's like based off the other shonen stuff. It's not really keeping the pace.
No, it's not. It's not up to snuff.
Laughing Salesman, that was the other...
We're saving that for next week because I was just going up to the end of Sunday.
Yeah, like I figured that's the case.
Trying to get us back onto some sort of
an actual like numbered schedule. Yeah.
Now we've all settled down.
Okay.
running. I don't think there's anything new. I did by the evil. Well, no, I actually haven't watched it. I've watched the opening credits to Atom, the beginning, or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Opening looks pretty good.
Yes. Mm.
The episode itself was supposedly not as good as that, but still okay.
Mm. Yeah, from what little I've seen of it, it looked good. I really like how your lad looks like olive oil.
I've seen the design, but I can't think of the thing, yeah.
Yeah, I can never... He's got... He's Ellie Fun in the dub, isn't he? I can't remember what his...
Which enemy is...
That's him. I can never remember how to pronounce it.
Mm.
Yeah. Hiroshi, I think. Everyone gets called by their first names in this because they're still in their late teens, early 20s.
They're not doctors, yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's... I don't know whether the Yuri on Ice fans will find it, but there's a lot of homoeroticism in that show. Not as much, not as deliberately as Yuri on Ice. But yeah, if you want to see Tenma just standing around in his pants, there's a scene.
You gotta build this robot, you know, gets covered in like oil and grease for his changing spare parts. Oh man, it gets so filthy.
Oh dear.
Right, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Mostly be posting what my appearances on your show for the last while, because our schedule is got a big up people who will have a lot of deferrals and cancellations and things. And so I'm going to probably move some things forward.
Yeah.
You're going to have Dexter's Lab up there anyway. Ego Trip, rather. And jumping ahead, I might pull something from further ahead that I planned back closer because it's easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some TV show called Mission Hill. It's about feckless 20-something people, but a cartoon. Or something to that effect, anyway. We'll find out on the show when we do it.
Okay, and as I said before, it will be another week of Niall talking at Japan Animator Expo.
Hey.
Okay, goodbye. See you next week.
Bye.
Adios.